Welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program with content created by and for queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Kelly J. Drumright, and this evening I'm building off of some themes from some recent episodes produced by other comrades of mine in the Outsources Collective. Specifically, I'm thinking about Elisa's recent episode about trans youth in sports, and also Stoney's reflections about Trans Day of Visibility and the promises / perils of representation. Plus, adding to it all this discourse about don't say gay bills and anti-trans legislation. So I wanted to bring something that digs deeper than the mainstream talking points. And I'm also an avid podcast consumer, so I did some research and found an interview that touches on all these themes and more. This is from one of the shows that's on my regular rotation called The Final Straw Radio. In this, you'll hear two voices, the host Scott and the guest Eric A. Stanley. But before I get into the interview, here's some info about Dr. Stanley. Eric A. Stanley is an associate professor in the Department of Gender and Women's Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. They are the author of Atmospheres of Violence, Structuring Antagonism, and the Trans Queer Ungovernable, which was published by Duke University Press in 2021. They've also made a few films in collaboration with Chris Vargas, the films Homotopia from 2006 and Criminal Queers from 2019. Eric is also an editor and, along with Tourmaline and Johanna Burton, has put together this book called Trapdoor, Transcultural Production and the Politics of Visibility, which was released in 2017. And with Nat Smith, Eric A. Stanley also edited Captive Genders, Trans Embodiment and the Prison Industrial Complex.
I was wondering how you define the state in its workings of power, but also as an object of our like countering our political movements. And like, I guess also if you want to talk a little bit about one of the things that I found really important in your book is how you highlight the incoherence of the state and also the way that we reproduce its logic. So yeah, I was just, if you want to talk a little bit about the state.
Yeah, another incredibly big question, but it also is really important. So for me, the way that I think about the state is I think I call it something like a collective projection, meaning that the state is not something fundamentally external to us, right? It's the collective we. And, you know, that's both good news and bad news. And I mean, I think, you know, we have the ability to radically transform it the way it transforms us, perhaps end it. But we also must be accountable to the ways that we allow it to continue. So that also seems really important to me. Like, you know, there is a certain kind of critique within anarchist thought or anti-statism or whatever you might want to call it that always assumes that the state is something, you know, external, that we have no accountability for its violence. And I actually think we have to make ourselves account to that continuing violence under the name of stopping it. So I think that that's why that configuration is really important. And then I also think about the collective projection of the state being its totality is useful because it also helps us understand the way that we're constantly reproducing it, right? You know, it's not only the cops in our heads, but the state itself is in our head. This is not to say that, like, you know, the murderous institution of the state is not real and that, you know, we don't all equally have to be accountable for its violence, right? But I am interested in why and how we continue to allow it to exist. Right. So on the question of the incoherence of the state form, right, there's this other kind of simplistic story that oftentimes gets told that the state is some kind of external force that just bears down upon us. And if that were true, it would actually be much easier to fight, right? And so that's why I argue about, argue that we must understand its radical incoherence as indeed its, you know, vicious fortitude. And again, that allows, which is also to say, mandates that we have a much more nuanced understanding of the relationship between the collective we and something that we imagine to be external, like the state.
I'm going to refer to a tweet that I saw you made recently, which is that we're not making, we don't, it's not that our demands are too little, that we need to demand more. And in a way, I feel like I really thought that was an important point, because like when we temper our demands, it's like we give the state too much power in some way. That's how I was understanding it. I don't know if you want to kind of jump off there at all and thinking about how we can like fight the state in a way that's not just like always on the back foot reacting to its incoherence and then narrowing our horizons because it feels so impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and right, this is obviously deeply in conversation with prison abolitionist thought and organizing as well. I mean, I actually see them as fundamentally the same project, even though people definitely disagree with that. But for me, one of the ways that the state, like one of the forms of violence that the state takes is in that radical narrowing of our dreams, our demands, our wants, our desires, right? It always forces us to ask for less and be happy with nothing, right? And again, that's why I think the internalization of the state, that kind of analysis is so important, because that's actually something that we're doing for the state, right? Even before they say no, you know, if we're going to think of it as something external, we're already saying no to ourselves and to each other.
You know, one thought I had is that this like so-called trans tipping point that we're past now, right? Like brought into representation, specifically, I think Black trans women in a different way than had been before. But I really feel like it goes hand in hand with a kind of both on like the reactionary right and on the left sort of spectacularization of the violence that Black trans women experience that feels like at best useless, at worst like harmful. And I'm wondering, I don't know what your thoughts are, just like how to work to keep Black trans women alive, right? And not relating to Black trans women as victims, and like, yeah, how, what kind of work we can do right now.
I mean, I think obviously always asking people what they want and need is where we always start. But I think to your point is incredibly important, right? Because at the beginning of the book, I think a lot about Marsha P. Johnson and the way that she was exiled from, you know, mainstream or even radical leftist lesbian and gay culture in the 1970s through the time of her death, actually. And now she's kind of been brought back in as a trans of color or Black trans woman activist ideal. And I make an argument that both of those are violent in and of themselves. So like one of them is not the remedy for the other one, because the way in which she is brought into the archive doesn't disturb the coloniality of the archive itself. All it is a kind of accommodation, not for the politics that Marsha was invested in throughout her life, but indeed to actually support a white supremacist state. That is really important, because I think as you're also, I mean, what I'm also hearing in this question is the ways in which trans women of color get emptied out of content or of politics, and they just become a screen upon which all kinds of people just project a whole lot of things onto them. And so I think that it is all of our tasks then to, again, understand, for example, Marsha as a theorist, and to read what she wrote and to listen to the words that she said, as opposed to just, you know, projecting our contemporary analysis on top of her as an empty subject of history.
How do you understand queer and trans? There's one thing that you described that I don't think I've ever like seen anyone write about in this way, and I thought it was so important, is that like we can get slurred at in the wrong way, and yet it's still correct in some manner, right? Because there's some way that you say we signify it differently. So that's like a specific kind of visibility that can be wrong and right at the same time. So I don't know if you have a way of like talking about how maybe you define trans and queer, or like the like location that we live in.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're getting at. I can only think about it through negation, because I can't think of any kind of prescriptive identity, because it's always going to fail. And so for me, trans and queerness is a kind of retroactive reading practice that can only be known after an identity or an event unfolds. But like you're saying, one of the things that I find really interesting is that, you know, I'm not deeply tethered to the idea of identity itself. And yet the world is constituted through identity, right? I'm always interested, you know, at the same time we have these radical critiques of, you know, the impossibility to know trans and queerness as a, you know, totalizing or generalizing force. Nonetheless, I walk down the street and someone knows that better than I know myself. And so that is really interesting. Like, what is it then, right? Like, and that to me is why I think about anti-trans and queer violence as a kind of general field of knowledge, or an epistemology of violence because of that everywhere and nowhere-ness that it simultaneously inhabits.
I guess, like, building on that then, do you want to talk a little bit about how you see sort of this disruption, this projection, this negation that gender and sexuality does, goes hand in hand with the process of racialization that has occurred specifically in the U.S. context through the capture and enslavement of Africans? Yeah, like, how does race, gender, sexuality get forged historically as these systems of domination? Because that's a huge part of the of what you're talking about in the book.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I think sometimes, because it is what the book is about, and so sometimes I forget to make it so explicit. So just to be clear, I'm never talking about everyone that, quote-unquote, might identify as LGBT, right? That's, like, a useless category for me. And indeed, I also make explicit that many people that identify under those terms that have access to normative power vis-a-vis white supremacy, ableism, class, other axes of difference, know very little in the materiality of their life about the forces of violence. So, you know, I'm not making this like equal distribution argument. That being said, you know, my book takes as kind of axiomatic that chattel slavery and settler colonialism are, you know, at least in this nightmare of the United States, the primary scenes of gender normativity's concretization. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I don't believe that we can ever do, quote unquote, queer trans theory without, you know, a deep engagement with both of those as ongoing practices and indeed not simply facts of history. Right. So I'm not interested in like how gender and sexuality took form in slavery as if it's something that happened then and isn't constantly happening now. Right. And so then, you know, an attention to the settler state and its, you know, anti-Black idiom is fundamental if we are ever going to attempt to begin to open up the questions of gender, sexuality, transness, queerness, etc. Right? So they can never be separated.
Opportunity knocking and was off of coffee. Inadequate like my window, the Grammys is way too lofty. And I could stay here forever, I could die here. I don't have to try here. Can I get my two sugars, please? Jesus made an album, I'm still waiting in a line for cream. She dreaming technicolor, lip black and white. Opportunity knocking and just got her nails. No skeletons in my closet, gonna open the door when Yale come. They ain't gonna wanna see my silhouette wrap. And cognac, my smelling all black. Mississippi vagabond, granny gon' turn up in her grave and say my granny really was a slave for this. All your incompleted similes and pages ripped, you know they whipped us. How you afraid to rap and you up to heaven after so we can freedom now. Ain't no ocean floor when you can be a Jesus now.
Don't feel the light that dwells.
Moments and cloudy days on my snap. Mysterious aberration illuminated the trap. My telephone calication synonymous with the sunrise. Mountains against the foreground forever me coming back. I ain't gonna cry the last time I leave my Chicago. 24 in LA, mojo teaching me how to drive. Whole world inside my rear view, this feeling me so alive. This feeling me so alive, enjoy the joy ride. Opportunity knocking, it's finally time to answer. The doorbell was only broken cause auntie was fighting cancer. And cigarettes on my mantle, keep calling me by my first name. Loving me when I'm lonely, pretending they really know me.
Don't feel the light that dwells deep within. You are powerful beyond what you imagine. Just let your light glow.
And when that call comes, you better say hello. And no hesitation.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, 93.7 FM in Nederland, and streaming live on the web at kgnu.org. I'm your host, Kelly, and I'm sharing some excerpts from an interview The Final Straw Radio did with organizer and academic Eric A. Stanley in November 2021.
We were talking about racialized gender, but also you kind of pull from a sort of like, I guess, like Sylvia Winter influenced idea that all of the kind of violence that we see that's gendered, sexualized, racialized is tied completely to the ideas of humanity and modernity. And you say that the racialized trans and queer person rests at the limit of the modern and of the human and is necessary to maintain the lie of those projects. Sort of through being endlessly disciplined and killed. This comes out really clearly in your analysis of suicide, and I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I really love this line that you say, trans queer suicide reads the world for the filth it is, because it puts it pretty boldly to me, what you're talking about here. But yeah, so I wonder if you want to talk about how the concepts of modernity and humanity come in to your analysis of like sort of the regulation of and killing of trans queer life.
Sure. So throughout the text, I kind of intentionally slip between the settler state, modernity, and enlightenment humanism. And again, I'm not saying that they're all the same thing, but I think together they gather up and they also help name these tendencies of recurrence that we inherit in our contemporary moment, right? So they're all doing something a little bit differently, but they all like help me name something, right? And so if the human is that which can stand before the law and make claims as its proper subject, right? That's like the kind of traditional understanding of the figure of the human. Then it also needs its double, its constitutive outside, to maintain its stability, right? And so this is a very like common figure in Black feminist thought and also in critical theory, right? The constitutive outside is that which constitutes the human, and then those that are subjugated to the limit then become limit concepts, and they kind of police the border, the inside outside, and they're necessary. They're like actually the major figures. You know, I think that is so compelling because of the specific forms of violence that I'm thinking about, right? It's not just about exiling people, but it's about a kind of incorporative inclusion where people are both forced out and brought in at the same time. So again, we can think about this with TERFs, like, TERFs are so fascinated. Like, they spend way more time thinking about gender than I do, a gender professor. You know what I mean? It's like, it's fascinating. I'm like, you are obsessed. And so I think that same formation is actually incredibly useful, right? Because that's the form of phobic attachment that I'm interested in, right? So it's, again, a kind of inclusive incorporation where it's both pushing things out and bringing things in. And that's actually a really horrifically violent formation to be caught in. Right, it's way worse than just exile, because you're like shuttled in between the inside outside in a scene of total war. And so for me, that ties into this figure of the human as, again, the subject of modernity, right? And so then the constitutive outside is this, that structure is what I'm naming as the limit concept. And it's, you know, that's a very like theoretical way of saying it. But it thinking about that in relationship to the chapter that I have on suicide, you know, that chapter is important to me because one of the things that I try to do in it is depathologize people that are pushed to the limit while also wanting to keep people alive, right? So it's not like a kind of nihilistic where I'm like, this is a jouissance or something like that. I'm like, this is actually horrific and I want it to stop. But I also know that we have to stop gaslighting people into recreating this narrative that this is an individual choice and that this person alone was pushed to the limit, when indeed the world is pushing people to the limit, right? The everydayness of, you know, racist, transphobic, homophobic, ableist violence is indeed the force that's pushing them there. It's not a kind of self. What Fanon calls autodestruction is never really about the person themselves. It's about the way in which they're positioned in a deadly world.
I wanted to ask you about representation and aesthetics, because you have this really interesting analysis of a surveillance film, and in that you're kind of going through like the filmic image itself and talking about how sort of dominant aesthetics are grounded in anti-blackness and anti-queerness, not even just how it's represented, but in the structure of representation. And like in your arguments about the specific acts of violence that you are reading, like the violence goes beyond the like immediate moment. But then you also, like, importantly, I think, make room for like queer, trans, radical art and like life as a kind of aesthetic. So I wonder if you talk about a little bit about anti-blackness, anti-queerness in aesthetic production, but also the rooms for alternative visions and use of like different media.
Yeah. So, I mean, that chapter, I'm thinking a lot with people like David Marriott and his work on racial fetishism, anti-blackness, and the moving image itself. Also, Fanon helps us think about this question. Sylvia Winter and, a bunch of other people. But for me, representation is always a double bind, right? So it's that which brings us into the world and that which brings us out of the world. You know, I also am a filmmaker. I like films. I understand the way that they literally build a world and they don't just represent one. So it's not as if I'm like arguing for a kind of, you know, I don't know, representational austerity or something like that as the revolutionary possibility of the world. Like, that sounds horrible. Like, no to that. And on the other hand, I know that, you know, quote unquote, positive representation is the thing that is most easily given to us by the settler state, right? We demand free housing, free healthcare, free education, free whatever it is. And they're like, oh, here's a, you know, trans sidekick on a TGIF show. You know, one of the things that I always say is that whatever is the thing that they're most ready to give us is the thing that we actually don't need. And so, you know, it's, again, holding that contradiction, because I know that representation, again, constitutes the world. And yet, it doesn't only do that.
I want to move to some of the stuff that you get to at the ending, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. So one of the words that comes up, it's in the subtitle, and it's part of the coda. There's legacies of resistance, and you give this the name of ungovernable, like becoming ungovernable. You take it from the classification that, you know, certain queer youth get for their perceived social disruption. And then you also use the word sedition, which I was like really excited to see. I take it in my reading of your book that some of the stuff that's happening is a kind of clandestine survival. And maybe this goes back to like being, you know, not within the archive and not being represented. But like, I guess, what do you mean by ungovernable? What do you mean by like a queer sedition? How do we have this kind of survival? What kind of worlds does it build? Is it generalizable, or is it like, does it need to be like kind of under wraps all the time?
I'm not sure if it's generalizable, and I'm not sure if it's prescriptive, like if it can be a prescriptive project, right? It might be, again, something that can only be noticeable, you know, in the aftermath of it or something like that. I'm not totally sure. I mean, ungovernability or becoming ungovernable is useful for me because it names a kind of non-space of being both a subject and an object simultaneously. And I think that it's actually how many people are forced to inhabit the world. So I think that it's generalizable in that reality. But I also think that because many of the practices are clandestine, like, I'm not interested in bringing them into representation outside of their specificity. Like, I'm not trying to narc people out. You know, I mean, I think about that a lot, like our relationship, like, well, what am I doing? And so, you know, I can only like nod towards things. But that being said, those are some of the moments that are so deeply generative to trans and queer world making. And I think it can be so incredibly small to something really large. It can be like, you know, when another trans person's working at the cafe and they give you your food for free. Like, it's like, it's actually on those basic levels, and that how that changes the molecular structure of your body. Like, I actually think about that a lot. And unfortunately, that's becoming increasingly uncommon. It used to be more common in like the 90s, you know, when there weren't security cameras and whatever, all that kind of stuff everywhere. And you could just like give someone a free coffee, and now that person will like get taken to jail. And so the examples that I use in the book are, Tourmaline has this really great film called The Personal Things, which is this really short stop motion animation film about Miss Major. And it kind of narrates how she changed all of her gender markers, and then she changed them back again. because she wanted to be recognized not as a cis woman, but indeed as a transgender person. And they wanted people to love her for that and to fuck all this other stuff. And to me, that moment is, I mean, it's also like changing state issued identification was actually much easier, like in a clandestine way, 25 years ago, because there weren't really massive computer systems and there were just paper with a picture glued on it. And so I think about that as indeed another kind of way of resisting the biometric drive of the contemporary settler state, right? There's all these like kind of movements towards, you know, more gender options, which I think are fine, and, you know, different forms of biometric technology that are not predicated on gender. But I actually don't think that any of those are going to necessarily get us any closer to freedom in a kind of generalizable way. I understand, yes, they're things that people need to stay alive right now, and I always will support that, especially for people that are in hyper-institutionalized situations. So I always will, again, support that. But that being said, you know, I don't think that that can be the end of, as Termaline puts it, our freedom dream. I think, again, that's the way that we're kind of caught in the cycle of asking for something really small when what we want and need is actually something much bigger.
I was thinking about how people always think people are afraid of the gay agenda, like that like gay people, queer people, trans people are like out to convert. And I'm thinking about that, like how you talk about the kind of, you know, violence that gets it right and wrong at the same time, because like through these like mutual practices of care, we do help each other become gay or queer or trans. So we are doing that work, but it's not the way that they think we're doing it, right? It's not like we're going and proselytizing. We're not like, you know, evangelical Christians. Right. And I wonder if you have any thought about that kind of gay agenda logic.
I guess how I would phrase it is that hopefully we're opening up the possibility for people to live. And so that can look like a lot of different things, and that can look like a lot of different things over time. And that's something that I think we need a lot more of. And, you know, sometimes that looks like recruitment. I mean, I think that's fine too. I'm from the 90s, so we used to say that. Yeah, and so I think that when you're in the social worlds that allow you to rub up with other people living in such like fierce beauty against the drives of the normative state, like, of course that's going to be contagious, right? Because you see all kinds of possibilities that have been substantially foreclosed to you your entire life, right? So you can feel that like on a kind of, on a molecular level. And it's, you know, terrifying and beautiful and invigorating and scary and all these things at once. But again, I think it radically opens up life worlds for us and new forms of relationality between us and others. You are powerful beyond you imagine. Just let your light glow. When that call comes, you better say hello. No hesitation, you no hiding deep down below. No beg your pardon. You better stay and grow your liberation.
There we have it. I'm Kelly Drumright. You've been listening to Outsources. Join us next week, Monday at 6:30 p.m. on KGNU for another episode of Outsources, or you can listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources. And if you have any news or events relevant to the queer community that you'd like us to share, or if you have any questions or comments about tonight's program, you can email us at outsources@kgnu.org.